Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, hello there. Welcome back to the OMG MotoGP podcast. And this, our 2023 MotoGP Christmas season review. It's only a week till Christmas or so that we're about to, that we are recording this. And if you're watching us on our YouTube channel, you can see Keith is very much in with festive cheer, the tree decorated in the background. That is Keith Ewan. Pete McLaren joins us as well from Crash.net. And my name is Harry Benjamin. And where to start for this season as we look back and look a little bit ahead as well to 2024? I suppose, Keith, big picture first of all, how do you reflect on 2023 as a whole?
I think it all panned out as we expected it to in the end. I mean, it went through phases, didn't it? The Aprilia in testing early on didn't look like it was going to be a motorbike that worked. Then it did, magnificently so. Then it fell away a little bit. KTM made that step that they'd got to make with all their money and their investment into things. Yamaha probably is the poor relation of the entire grid nowadays, with Honda very close second to them when it comes to performance during the course of the year. Marc Marquez is back. I think that the Bagnaia-Jorge Martin battle of the year kind of ended up where we might have expected it to, in that Bagnaia just has that extra little bit of maturity to carry it off where it counted. In the main races, the main Sunday races, Bagnaia just seemed to have that kind of edge. How that's all going to shape up for 24? You mentioned 2024. Do you know what? When you said this was a review show and you got a running order for this, Harry, I had to laugh because I've kind of forgotten about 23 already. I'm already on 24 because there's so much stuff that we've got to talk about pre-Christmas that I'm really, really looking forward to 2024. I mean, Sito Pons out of a job. The great Sito Pons, former world champion, no longer in employment. His team, he came apart. He was going to go and work for the RNF cryptocurrency mob, wasn't he, as a some kind of financial guru to bring in sponsorship and the like. I mean, Sito Pons out of work. I saw Sito at Mike Trimby's memorial at the RAC club last week. You know, really strange feeling that a man of his ilk is out of work. And I think that these are the changes that we're going to have. Mike Trimby, again, you know, Misano was marked, well, probably for two things, obviously losing Mike on the Friday, and Danny Pedrosa, a wild card, which is something else that we can push forward to 2024. We've got more wild card opportunities coming up next year. They're going to be very exciting as well. I'm sure we'll get into that as we go. But Danny Pedrosa finishing fourth in a race on a KTM, just out of the box. He did two wildcards, I think, last year, and he was in the points both time around. But the fourth place as a wildcard is pretty spectacular, considering the company he was keeping. So there's a lot to look forward to, as well as back. Pete probably got a better memory than me, I've got to say. Come on, Pete, fill in the gaps.
Well, you did a good job of summing it all up there, Keith. But I think, as you say, you know, coming into the year, Bagnaia was the favourite, wasn't it? I mean, we all thought, he's got the championship under his belt now. He's going to pretty much walk away with this. And to be honest, by the sort of middle stages, he was looking pretty comfortable, wasn't he? There'd been a few races. You saw Bezzecchi, Martin sort of tussling with him a bit, but no one really looked like they were threatening him. And then suddenly this, that shocking high side in Catalunya combined with Martin getting that setup right on the Pramac bike and just going on that run. And I mean, what a step forward that both Martin and Bezzecchi made compared to last year in terms of the standings. And, you look at it, as you say, the wins, they were pretty similar, in terms of wins. I'm talking about Bagnaia and Martin. Similar in terms of wins, similar also in terms of mistakes, really, non-scores. The difference actually probably just came down to one of those slightly off days or off weekends where they were a little bit below average. Pecco delivered. He pulled in the points. The number of weekends, I think, where he got at least 20 points out of 37. So nothing spectacular, but just kept bringing the points home. He did it more than twice as often as Martin did. And that probably is where the difference was. Martin's been speaking, isn't he? I think he regrets, obviously, Indonesia falling from the lead. You've got things like Australia, all these big moments that capture, your attention. But to be honest, those sort of things even themselves out, I think, over the year. And again, as you said, Keith, the Pecco deals with the pressure. And he was under pressure, wasn't he, coming in at the end of the year. Marc Marquez even is predicting Martin's going to win this. You had all these people saying, Pecco's going to lose this. Pecco kept quiet. He dealt with the pressure and he got it done.
Question for me would be, have we seen, I think Bagnaia, probably we've seen him at his best during the course of the year, the way that he handled the pressure and everything. But Martin seems to have headroom for me. I mean, he was Mr. Sprint Saturday, wasn't he? Always managed to cover off. I mean, he won more sprints than anybody. But he seems to have that extra headroom. He's got that extra step that he can make. Whereas Bagnaia, I think he's at the top of his game. And went through the year at the top of his... they both made mistakes. You're absolutely bang on dead right. I think next year, the amount of races we've got next year, now that we've got all the data for sprints, we've got all the data for the Sunday races, there's going to be quite some changes come the end of 2024. I'm even looking forward to 2025 at the moment from a health and safety position. I really think that there is going to be a situation where changes are going to have to happen during the course of next year, because I don't believe that we can carry on with the intensity that we've got in Grand Prix. With the loss of Mike Trimby in Erta, I don't think any of it, excuse my cold, by the way, if I sound a bit cluttered. With the loss of Mike Trimby in Erta, the man that had the power behind the throne, if you like, it's going to turn into more of a committee site situation. The FIM are likely to get more involved. Dorna, what will their influence end up being, I wonder? They're obviously promoters. They're looking to try and build as much financial benefit as they can into the series as well. But it's going to be a situation where, as Erta backs away a little bit, possibly from the representation of riders and teams, because that will be the way of things, it will become not such a dictator's domain as it would have been with Mike Trimby controlling Erta and forcing things through. I think as it becomes more of a committee, that's when it weakens slightly. It's when the FIM come in more. And suddenly, this new riders' union that Sylvain Guintoli is trying to put the nuts and bolts in place will come into its own. And my belief is that you'll end up with the employment of lawyers. I believe that from a health and safety position, if I was running their riders' union, the first thing I would do is go to all the top riders and say, this is the cash we need to employ a 250 grand lawyer to look after our interests of the year. No rider in any rider's union can stick his head too far above the turret without getting his head blown off as far as his racing future is concerned. It's too much of a distraction. So, I think what we're going to end up with is we're going to have a fourth entity that's going to get involved in the rules. The MSMA, for instance, the Motorcycle Sports Manufacturers Association, they have a situation where they make rules and it's got to be unanimous. That's got to change at some stage. So there's going to be some massive, massive changes. Whether they happen this winter or whether they happen during the course of 2024, I don't know. But there are, believe me, some big changes to come in our motorcycle sport from the top end of things, because it's unsustainable the way it's headed at the moment with the amount of races you've got. Injuries. Mate, I've been there myself. The fact is you fall off. You see these guys fall off. I mean, 29 times for Marc Marquez this year. 29 crashes. If you fall off your push bike and get a few grazes and a few bumps, you're aching for a week, maybe two. These guys are never fully fit. They've always got something that's either strained, bent, buckled, busted. And that carries through the year with all of these races they've got to do. Add to the fatigue of some of the back-to-backs that they've got again next year. I looked at the schedule. I mean, it's an absolute bloody nightmare. I'm sorry if you're not on YouTube because I've just got it up here now. You know, the potential for 23 races next year at the moment. I know there's a couple in there that haven't yet been homologated. But, and they got spares. And they've even got Balaton Park there in Hungary as a reserve event, just in case one of the others don't make it. You know, you know, 24 tracks are on the list for next year, one of them being a reserve. So I think there's some, I don't think everybody's quite realised the amount of aggravation coming in January, February, the realisation of it.
Well, you mentioned injuries, and it, this year was already, you know, the longest season ever. It's going to get longer. And of course, Pete, we had the introduction of sprint races, which Keith's already alluded to. Now, I think on the whole, I mean, from my perspective, I've enjoyed the sprint racing. I think it's been a good addition. But you can't not look at the fact that there has not been a full grid of permanent Grand Prix riders for one race this year because of injuries garnered in the sprint.
Yeah, exactly, Harry. I agree with you. I think from the show perspective, the sprints have been great. They've done the job that was intended. But also, and this comes back to what Keith was just saying, most of the riders, when you speak to them about the sprints, they would prefer them not to be every weekend. They would prefer to have more like you guys have in Formula One, Harry, where is it, what, half a dozen maybe or less? Or
six.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it was up to the riders, they would prefer it to be like that. Now, you then open a whole other can of worms, as in which races do you have for those six, et cetera, et cetera. So, and I think most riders accept the sprint races are here to stay, but in an ideal world, I think they would prefer them to be sort of a speciality event almost, you know, not the week in, week out for the reasons that Keith has mentioned. The crashes, as you say, I think there were 23 more over the course of the year. So that's, you know, it's only one more. This is for MotoGP class. That's only one more per round. But of course, a lot more were in races, and race crashes tend to be one rider hitting another and people getting injured, which is why, as you say, Harry, we never had a full grid of riders for any race, because you know, the number of crashes might not look like more, but instead of a low side in practice, it was two riders colliding in a race. More racing, more accidents, more injuries in that sense. So yeah, there's those kind of things that need to be discussed, as Keith said, that the riders will want an input on. Another one might be tire pressures. You know, we saw, you know, towards the end of the year, we saw Digia stripped of that podium at Valencia. You know, I mean, thank goodness MotoGP dodged the nightmare of the title being changed by it, but it did just show what may have happened. You know, Digia was on the podium. He could have been either in front of one of the title contenders or between them. And you know, by penalising him, that would have changed the points. And who knows what might have happened there. So at the moment, there's no warning for next year. You know, if you are below the limit, you're out. There is no warning. So, you know, will that change? Will they come up with a different system? That's another thing that perhaps the riders and the stakeholders in MotoGP will need to sort out, I think.
And we thought track limits was going to be a problem forever, didn't we? Track limits seem to have sunk back into the background nowadays and seems to be quite a reasonable situation. I mean, if you look at the MSMA, the new ranking for concessions, I mean, you've got to add the concessions into this as well. Tire pressures, do you know what? That rule just annoys me. I can understand why it has to be, you know, a minimum tire pressure, but it's just one that is going to cause us a problem throughout the year. And for fans at trackside, nobody wants it sorting out in a committee room after we've had the podium, you know, and that's the potential for next year, as you've already alluded to, Pete, that you know, if someone is, you know, declared top three, whatever it might be, the position they might be in, and then it's taken away because of a tire pressure, you know, where they've been one lap wrong, under pumped, then you've got a problem. But the next year's concessions, it's a real problem for the MSMA to have agreed this, really, when you think about it, because it has to be a unanimous decision at the end of the day. And the concessions that Honda have got, because it's based on how we start this off for next year, it's based on the points available from last year. So who scored what? And if you're in the lowest 35%, you are in rank D, which is where Honda and Yamaha are, which gives them, depending on how many races we end up with next year, 9 or 10 engines for the first time. You haven't had that for a long time. Engine spec is free. So you can do what you like. So if you're in this category D, these are massive concessions to Honda and Yamaha as they start the year. It resets halfway through the season and again at the end of the year, obviously. So you can have concessions into the first half of the year, but you might not have some of them for the second half of the year. It's slightly confusing to make a commentary over at this point, but once we get it up on graphics and stuff like that for people to see, it might be something that is slightly more understandable. Private testing is free for the bottom 35%. These are big concessions for Honda to come back into the fray. I don't feel Yamaha will be able to take advantage of it. I just don't think Yamaha are far enough forward to be able to make this work for them. But certainly for Honda, these are big concessions that could, you know, they're allowed two aero updates during the course of the year as well. Another massive thing. Everybody's still bickering over ride height adjustments and so on and so forth. Nobody wants them, but of course Ducati, to get rid of them, you've got to get Ducati on side as the rules are at the moment. Pete, I mean, my understanding is the Grand Prix Commission, GPC, FIM, Dorna, IRTA, and the MSMA. Now they're the four, and I think Dorna have a casting vote if there's an equal disagreement. But the FIM, Dorna, IRTA, and the MSMA, that makes up the Grand Prix Commission. And they basically can, I think, pretty much overrule the MSMA in individual. If they want to make, they could change the unanimous rulemaking decision of the MSMA. Now, it would be contentious, but I believe they can do that and should do that.
I think that there's issues such as, is it a safety, you know, a safety change that can be introduced? Normally, I think what happens is that the FIM and IRTA vote with Dorna. So although you've got the four members, as you say there, Keith, in effect, you've got the MSMA and then you've got Dorna and IRTA and FIM will vote with what Dorna go with. That in reality seems to be what happens. So if you've got a split there, you end up with 3-1, if you like. But normally the idea is that the manufacturers, if it's a technical issue, it's left to them to thrash it out. And it's only in sort of extreme circumstances and safety is the thing that's brought up. That someone will overrule the manufacturers. That's
but at the moment, the idea with this unanimous, all manufacturers, all six must agree on something. It means that there's always that right of veto by any one particular team. And at the moment, Ducati, because they've got such an advantage. I mean, we've got ECU changes next year as well, which could make some difference too. But the point is, the sport is being held back by this unanimous rule, in my view. Yeah, Or you could argue the other side of that, you know, by having to agree everything, the sport or the manufacturers or the motorcycles being developed are being developed to the nth degree. But is that good for the sport?
This unanimous thing, I mean, for example, let's take the concessions. Now, Ducati, they've said, look, they were happy to give Honda and Yamaha these extra concessions because they accept that they need, for whatever reason, they need the opportunity to catch up. But they weren't happy about KTM and Aprilia, in effect, getting more testing tires than they have, and more wildcards. You know, the sort of the C ranking, isn't it, that KTM and Aprilia are in. And Gigi was asked, well, why did you agree with it? He says it's unanimous. And he said, well, because in the end, you know, we all have to reach an agreement. So although you get this statement that things are unanimous, it doesn't actually mean that they all agree as such. But if it is one manufacturer, you know, maybe isolated, sometimes they will hold their ground and say, no, we're not changing things. Other times they could sort of be persuaded to continue. But yeah, on the concessions point, yeah, that there's various views on this. I mean, Jack Miller, for example, was saying, well, hang on, Honda won a Grand Prix this year. KTM didn't, which is true. I mean, KTM, they won a couple of sprint races, didn't they? But they didn't win a Grand Prix. Rins won a Grand Prix for Honda. Now, obviously, as you made clear, Keith, the system is changing. It's now going to be about constructors' points, not about podiums and wins, which was the old system. But, you know, so the point being that there's various people in factories going, well, hang on, why are they getting that? Why are they getting that? It's a tricky one. I think in the end, what they want is that, I mean, Ducati got, what, 96%, I think, of the potential constructors' points. That's why they're in ranking A. I mean, 96%. And the aim, I think, will be that everybody will sort of settle in bands B or C. That to me is it. So the guys in D, which is Yamaha and Honda, they get all of the concessions, all the big perks. they will eventually move up to at least C. I think that's the aim. And Ducati will drop to at least B. I think that's what MotoGP is aiming for here. So you'll effectively have all of the manufacturers. The only difference between them will be number of testing tires and number of wildcards. I think that's what they're aiming. Now, whether that's going to happen, I don't know.
Interesting that you touched on KTM there as well, because KTM was shut. The door was slammed in their face regarding extra grid slots. And I think that that was to try and keep Marc Marquez from jumping ship to KTM at one point. I think that was almost a Honda protection type scheme, in that suddenly there was an opportunity across there. Would Marc have jumped to KTM? He's obviously jumped in the end anyway to Ducati. But the point being, you just can't always be sure about what is going on behind those gilded desks.
I've got to say, I don't understand that. You know, KTM offering, you know, the budget would have been a well-budgeted team. Aki Ayo, we know, experienced guy, team manager, Moto2, multiple champions in Moto2, aren't they? I mean, I don't understand that. I mean, what harm would there have been? I know there's the system, the grid slots, and you're not supposed to have extra independent teams. That was the grounds on which it was turned down. But you do just think, bigger picture, you know, someone should have stepped back and said, the two more competitive bikes, two more riders that we could have had on the grid as well. I think it was a missed opportunity. And I think there's been some words from Pit Bira that the KTM were kind of taken a bit aback by that they, you know, were turned down, given all this, the input that they put into Grand Prix. You know, the Rookies Cup, they're in Moto3, they're in Moto2, they're in MotoGP, and yet they can't get two more places on the grid.
Was it also to sort of not scare off more, you know, Yamaha and Honda, Japanese manufacturers, you know, if another team suddenly comes in that's not a Japanese manufacturer, suddenly starts doing better than the factory Yamahas and Hondas, then suddenly, Dorna have got another Suzuki on their hands.
Well, I think that Dorna are managing it in the way that they see it at the time that they see it as we move forward. There's always something that we don't know about that they're operating towards, or they're trying to appease in some way, shape or form. But I think Pete's right. It's a missed opportunity. I think we've said that all the way through the year regarding KTM. It would have been a good thing. But I mean, I actually, if we take a vote on it between the three of us, I like these concession rules. Something had to be done. And I mean, Honda and Yamaha. So manufacturers' points, they've got to be the lowest 35%. Gives them 260 test tires compared with the 170 that you get as a ranked A team. You've got private testing, it's free if you're in category D. GP circuit testing, you're only allowed three circuits for A, B and C ranking, but you can have any GP circuit if you're in D. That's quite a big one. Wildcards, you're allowed six for categories D and C. Engines, an extra couple of motors, which is always going to be a good thing. An engine spec, that's the crucial one for me, is free, as long as you're in the lower category D ranking.
Keith, coming back to your words about the calendar, sorry, when will they have time to test?
Good point.
I mean, Vin, imagine, you can, presumably will have to be on the Monday after a race, won't it? But still, you know, as if the Honda and Yamaha riders are not facing a big enough season as it is, they're now going to have to do private testing sandwiched in somewhere, you know, during the year. Obviously, they'll be at the Sepang Shakedown. That's a no-brainer. I think all the Honda guys, all the Yamaha guys will be there. That one makes sense. But once the racing gets going, I mean, I think it would have to be the Monday. It's the only way that they could possibly,
I'll tell you what,
fit in any test.
The summer break is going to be a busy one this year, that's for sure, for some riders. If they've not got that, if they've not jumped out of Category D by the time we get to the summer break, where again, the pretty much the cutoff point is the half-season part of it, where concessions change again. It's going to be a busy year for some. There's no doubt about it. I've said this before. I mean, maybe we're going to end up going the NASCAR way with two or three teams. NASCAR is so busy in America. Anybody that follows car stuff will know what I'm talking about. And bearing in mind, we've got a NASCAR team coming into MotoGP soon anyway. So the link there. Sorry, everyone. Apologising for bringing the car stuff in, but the fact of the matter is that we've got a NASCAR team coming in anyway. So they'll be familiar with this leapfrogging of teams and riders and equipment as they go through the season. There's some 40-odd races in a NASCAR season, and there's just no time to breathe in between. So they piggyback, leapfrog, should I say, not piggyback, but they leapfrog each other around the United States to keep the whole thing rolling. And with the amount of work that these guys have got to do in MotoGP coming up, we might well be seeing a bit more of that.
There is clearly a lot of work to do, especially for the Japanese manufacturers. I do want to come on a bit more. We've spoken about them already. KTM, because I think back to our 2023 season preview way back when, and I don't think any of us thought anything of KTM. In fact, they looked like they were in trouble. And then what a turnaround, pretty much from the start, unless we all just read testing wrong. But KTM, especially for Brad Binder on the bike as well, a decent year for them. Jack Miller with some struggles, but KTM, from where they were in pre-season testing, I think they've got to look back at 2023 and go, well, actually, you know, it could have been a lot
worse. Testing is quite often about chucking stuff away as much as it is finding stuff that works. It's about eliminating the things that you think you're going in a direction, and you discard those ideas as you move forward, and you focus where you are going to be strongest. And I think maybe we were fooled a little bit by Aprilia and a little bit by KTM in the early season part, because they had changes in the pipeline. And they just needed to dispense with all the stuff that they perhaps hadn't quite worked their way through. And maybe that's what fooled a lot of us underly clever punters.
In fairness, Keith, I asked Brad Binder about this. You know, they were worried. You know, in pre-season testing, they came away from the Sepang test also thinking what we were all thinking. You know, whoa, we're in trouble here. So I think we weren't fooled in terms of where they were. We were all surprised by how quickly they fixed it all. I think that's what happened. But yeah, I think they've gone on record multiple times, the team managers as well, as saying, you know, no, we were in trouble during the winter, but yeah, they turned it around in some sort of speed and then kept that development going, didn't they? Who'd have thought they would have introduced a carbon fiber frame halfway through the year?
It worked.
And it would instantly, yeah, exactly, Keith, instantly work. I mean, so yeah, I mean, they had the consistency, didn't they? They needed that consistency. It was the one thing they'd been lacking, wasn't it? They'd always been able to win a race or two. Okay, they didn't win a Grand Prix this year. They won some sprints. Should have won Valencia, of course. But they got that consistency. And, you know, improvements in qualifying as well, which maybe Jack Miller helped with. He brought some new ideas from Ducati, new ways. Him, his crew chief, and, you know, the other guys that moved across from Ducati. All of that input, I think, has just made the KTM a more refined package. And for me, the Aprilia, I mean, it wasn't a disaster, was it? They were about where they were last year. They were third in the constructors. They were third this year. Bear in mind, it was their first year without concessions. We've seen quite a lot of factories drop away, haven't we? Or really struggle. I mean, they at least managed to hold their position without having all of those things, or most of those things you read out previously, Keith, for the concessions that they had under the old system. They managed to sort of hold their level. They won two races. They won one the year before. They won a sprint. But they weren't consistent, and they had that up and down. But you know, not a disaster for Aprilia, but I think they came into the year with big expectations, and you could feel the frustration in the early rounds when they weren't taking on Ducati. I think they really thought they could come into this year, fight Ducati, and that they put too much, you know, expectation on the early rounds when it was a massively long season. If they'd have just concentrated on, you know, making the most of the points in the first half, they'd have been in a much better position in the second, because they did. You know, they did move up the order. They weren't too far away from the top three or four places in the championship.
Well, I think you've there's two things in there, isn't there? The KTM situation had Danny Pedrosa. Danny Pedrosa as a wild card. Danny Pedrosa as a test rider was an absolute asset for KTM and moved them in the right direction. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And Aprilia, you're right. Halfway through the season, I mean, British Grand Prix. I mean, I've got that marked off as one of my favourite races of the year, if not the favourite race of the year. Aleix Espargaró pinching it off Bagnaia on the last lap at the British Grand Prix on an Aprilia was pretty damn spectacular. And you've got to say, at that point, they were definitely on the ramp. You know, that they were title challengers at that point in the season. So I would say Aprilia probably ended their year with a major disappointment. Maybe KTM, I mean, you're right when you said should have won Valencia. Jack Miller, I was rooting for Jack Miller to make that comeback, because he's had a really horrible time in the last few rounds, and to come back, and then he goes and dumps it. You can't blame a man for trying, by the way, and I never would do, but the point being is that was theirs for the taking of Valencia.
Well, I mean, yeah, KTM, good turnaround from pre-season testing. Aprilia, I think, left wanting more for certain. But then again, they did get two Grand Prix wins, and KTM, nada. There are a lot of changes for next season, particularly, though, a few around who is on what bike. And of course, in 2023, we bid goodbye to Pol Espargaró. Of course, changes for Marc Marquez. We've covered that left, right and centre. But also right at the very end, we got confirmation of Fabio Di Giantonio and Luca Marini moving to their respective bikes. Let's not forget Zarco, Rins, Morbidelli, all changing bikes. Keith, maybe I should put, apart from Marc Marquez, which move is getting you excited for next year? What are you hoping to see?
I think it's Marini. Hmm? I think the HRC thing. I think that, you know, like he was at the bottom end of the pecking order at Ducati, wasn't he? So the move really, and he will have, again, forgive me, Formula One analogy. When our good British driver, Lewis Hamilton moved across to Mercedes, everybody went, what? Because at that point, it wasn't competitive. And so we might have a bit of a Lewis Hamilton moment here. If that Honda, and it looked quite good at the test of Valencia. I know that the Honda went quite good at Valencia anyway for the final round, but it looked quite good in testing. And if they have come up and they've got these concessions and all the extra bits they need to move it forward, now Honda, really, really, they obviously still want it. And Luca Marini could find himself in a situation where it was the best move of the year. And that's the one that I'm focused on at the moment. I think Marini has shown, you know, is he anywhere near as good as some of the top riders? No, not yet. Does he have a bit of, does he have headroom? Does he have a step to make? Yes, he probably does. Will he be able to make it? We'll find out fairly soon. I'd have said he was a bit more Bagnaia than Marc Marquez, his brother, you know, or not even like his brother, actually, when I think about it. Well, he's not even like Valentino, but he's got some good people in his corner. I think it's also what we need to look at. We've all talked about rider changes, but I think crew chief changes are critical. And we've seen a real shuffle of the pack regarding crew chiefs as well during the course of this year. So a lot of early work for a lot of people, you know, like, we're yabbering on in our spare time before Christmas and ready to get fat and drunk, where those guys are going to be absolutely poring over data and look at, you know, the work that's going on right now while we're yabbering on is immense. It's enormous, you know, and in between the shows and the presentations, we just had the big Ducati blast and so on and so forth. Behind all that facade is a lot of hard work going on back in the data departments, trying to disseminate everything that's gone on during the course of the year. So Marini's the one to watch. Honda are the ones to watch. They've got the concessions. They've got the extra tyres. They've got the extra engines. They've got carte blanche track-wise that they can go and play with because they're in that rank D for concessions next year. And I don't think, I can't see Yamaha being able to maximise their position in the same way that Honda will. It's a feeling. I mean, I would be massively happy to be wrong because this could be the first year for some time that Yamaha haven't been able to come up with at least something. But I can't see it. I've got no wind of anything that's on the cards anywhere. I don't know what you feel, Pete, from where you're sat and the way you've been looking in, but Yamaha looked the weakest for me for next year.
Certainly off the Valencia test, Quartararo, I mean, he's being realistic about his chances anyway, isn't he? He's saying he wants to be closer for next year. He knows it would be too much to say, you know, I want to jump from where we are now to fighting for the championship, bearing in mind they didn't win a race this year. When was the last time that happened? 2003. So, you know, that's where they are at the moment. So there's some big improvements to make there. I'm interested to see how Rins will go, I think, talking of moves. You know, how will he adapt to the Yamaha? There's obviously the comparison with the Suzuki, the inline four engine. Although Rins was saying, look, to be honest, it's more about the aero these days. That's what makes the feeling of the bike different for him as much as the configuration of the engine. But I think Marini, as you say, Keith, I think he's in the Honda at the right time. You know, the pressure is off now. But at the same time, there's going to be a lot of resources thrown in. There's the whole concessions thing, which we just brought up. And he's your guy for that. You know, Marini loves the technical side of things. And I think, I'm really interested to see what he can do in that position of having a whole factory behind him. I think I actually asked him at Misano, I said, because everyone knows how much he loves the technical side of things. He's been on a year-old bike with no new parts on it. I said, do you ever kind of get a bit frustrated that you don't get anything new to try? And he said, well, that's what your life is when you're a satellite rider. You know, he accepted it, but now he is getting this factory chance. And I think it's going to be interesting to see. But, on the other, let's say his former teammate, people like Bez, I mean, I think, he's been getting better and better, hasn't he? Big step forward in the rider standing this year, obviously overshadowed by Martin, but he's made a big step up. You talked about Martin, where will he go for next year? The headroom he's got. I think Bez is another one with that headroom. And another one of those riders who's going to be fighting for that factory Ducati seat for 2024, isn't he? They've got a queue of riders there, as KTM will have. I mean, Brad Binder is signed up. So one of those factory KTMs has already gone. So then you've got already Miller and Acosta, who presumably will be in contention for the second seat at KTM in 2025 and beyond, without even bringing in Marc Marquez and maybe people like Jorge Martin, who has said, I want to be a factory rider. I want it to be with Ducati, but if it isn't, maybe I'll look around.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good point. A couple of the riders to focus on that I suppose we haven't given much attention to in the season overall that I mentioned there that are switching are Zarco and Morbidelli. Now, of course, Zarco, I was reading over the weekend that, if the Honda ride hadn't come about, he was thinking of hanging up his helmet come the end of the year. And of course, Morbidelli, off the back of a struggling couple of seasons, he goes to VR46. Do we think this is a last chance saloon for Morbidelli, or actually was this year fairly, fairly good in comparison to the previous year, Keith?
Yeah, I think you got a problem with last chance saloons for a lot of people, even when you're riding well with the amount of talent that's coming up. I mean, when you saw the way that Acosta was drifting the first day out on a MotoGP bike at Valencia and what he was doing with that motorbike. I mean, anybody that's raced a motorbike just sat back. Well, anybody anywhere that's just sat back and gone, bloody hell. it was so impressive to watch that, And I don't think you've got many laurels to look back on when it comes to MotoGP. It's the top class. We've seen contracts that can get broken, and that is a trend that I think we'll see more of. Morbidelli, he's got to come up with the goods now. Zarco, you never bloody know with Zarco. He could be a winner or last place. I mean, he is a unique individual.
He is now finally a winner.
Yeah. He's just such an unusual, unpredictable character with the nicest manner you could possibly have. He'd be a massive loss to the paddock. But he's still got to consistently put it together. I mean, this is about winning championships. It's not about doing the odd sprint race here and there. You've got to be in with a chance of winning the championship, or at least showing that kind of potential so you can back up the factory guys if needs be. We'll see. I mean, again, how quickly will the parts filter down? What will be passed across? What will be beneficial? We're gonna find all that out in the fairly early days. But Pete's comment a minute ago: where are they going to find time for this testing? Hmm. Injury. You're going to be carrying injuries virtually throughout the year, and the last thing you need is a bloody test on a Monday, having given it. Honestly. I don't think I can explain to anybody. Anybody that's been in any kind of sport and say Sunday is your peak day. So you get there on the Wednesday. Thursday is press day, walk the track, run the track, cycle the track, whatever is your choice. Press conference at 5 o'clock. All the usual PR rubbish that you've got to do. Look at
Talk
the data
to Pete.
From the week before. Yeah. I think it's scum of the earth, them bloody media people. Got to do all your bits and pieces. Friday, kick bollock scramble to get your faster time to get yourself into the qualifying position you need to be in. Saturday, even bigger day on Saturday because you've got a sprint race as well now. Just when you've got a peak on a Sunday, you're knackered. You've already done a week's work and you're suddenly got Sunday and you've got a massively long race. So the last thing you need to be doing is getting up on bloody Monday morning, full of the aches and pains, masseuse and whatever it takes to fix you, and ride round and round in circles testing something. It's awful. I mean, I used to hate testing, and it was something that was fairly minor back in the day. But now, you know, those guys, and the trouble is as well, if you're not right on the very limit, it's a waste of time testing it. You've still got to be giving it 110%. You can't have a ride around and say, yeah, that's better. That'll be all right next week. You've got to be over the limit often to make something either work or not work. And that is a big ask. I always smile at the Valencia test at the end of it. Not only have you come to the end of your race weekend, you've come to the end of the year. You've done the FIM awards on the Sunday night down in downtown Valencia. And then you've got to get up. You know, you have a bit of a rest on a Monday for the MotoGP guys because they test on the Tuesday. But your Moto3 and Moto2 guys have all got to go straight for it on your Monday. I mean, what a bloody nightmare. But there you go. It's going to be a tough year.
Does that mean there's going to be a lot more emphasis on test riders? I mean, there already is, but for next year, you know, that becomes an even more crucial. And particularly if there are more riders injured, and you never wish an injury, but that means that there might well be more race opportunities for riders who haven't got a full time seat.
I think when it comes to quality test riders, yes. I think what we've tended to have in the past is test riders tend to be the guys that have fell off the end of the slope then, and they're on the downslope performance wise. I don't think that's going to be the case in the future. They're going to hire top quality, you know, guys that just haven't quite got a MotoGP job to be in the test team. Maybe the Morbidellis of this world with his experience and his analytical mind would be a good test rider. Personally, I don't think he would be because I don't think that motivates him enough. To be a test rider, motivation to ride beyond the limit is incredibly difficult to do. Cal Crutchlow is a great test rider. In fact, better than... I mean, his attention span, I would have said, is like most riders, is pretty short. But to be a test rider, you know, is annoying sometimes. It's not something... You've really got to be in the frame of mind for it. But you've got to give it everything you can to produce the...
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Best out of whatever you're testing, and that is a really difficult thing. Big up, Danny Pedrosa.
Yeah, I knew that was coming. big up. There might be a question on Danny Pedrosa later, where there is a quiz to round off the show, by the way.
So I hate play along quizzes.
At home. Play along at home. We're not there yet, though, because I want to move on and talk about the new team. But first of all, Pete, just one more word on a rider. And we talk about how difficult it was for all the riders this season, but Pol Espargaró in particular, a real tough year for him, and it culminates in him losing his ride for 2024.
Yeah, you know, the sort of the musical chairs, and we spoke about the KTM. This is also why they were trying to get some more grid places, because they wanted to keep all five riders, if you like, with the addition of Acosta next year. They weren't able to do that, and Pol ended up being the guy that sort of stepped aside for Acosta. But as you say, I mean, massive injuries for Pol at round one in Portimao. Still, even at the end of the year, he was still physically, you know, he was having issues with the hot weather, he was saying, and the way that it would affect the muscles in his shoulders, his neck, and that kind of thing. So let's hope that this extra time off, he can get back to 100%. He'll be doing, we don't yet know how they're going to divide the wild cards up between himself and Pedrosa. Pedrosa he's been non-committal on how many he would like to do. I think he would like to do more wild cards, but he's also said, look, there has to be a real aim or a goal towards doing the wild cards. The ones this year were, of course, the new race weekend schedule, the sprint races. Danny had no experience of those, obviously. They were new this year. So he wanted to do wild cards to understand the new weekend format, all that kind of thing. So there was a clear purpose to it. And, you know, he approached it very seriously. He'd done private testing at Misano before the race weekend and everything else. And we all saw how well he went there. Incredible for a rider to just step in like that and fight for a podium. So, yeah, you know, we don't know exactly how many wildcards he will do, how many pole will do. We know there's six in total, Keith was saying, from the concessions. So that's how many they're allowed. And, you know, Paul is not closing the chapter entirely on his full-time career, but we've really got to wait and see, I think, how he gets on in this new role. You know, does he, how he takes to it? How, you know, does he enjoy being a test rider, or does he, you know, does he want to come back and be a full-time race rider? We know that he was approached, it seems, about the Honda ride, for example. So, you know, he is valued for the work that he's done.
Who wasn't?
Well, that's true. That's true. But there were a lot of more rumors than there were actual approaches, I think, weren't there? When it, yeah. But I think, you know, Paul needs some time just to heal for the, you know, as Keith's been explaining, the battering anyway that these riders take, and that was the injuries that he had. He's what, 1.5 centimeters shorter now because of the damage to his spine, things like that. I mean, it was a massive accident, and you know, first thing is, let's hope he gets fit and healthy. Yeah, and let's see how he gets on in this role. I mean, we don't know yet. Also, could he be almost like a coach or a mentor with Acosta, that kind of thing? It's all to be determined how often we'll see him at the racetracks. I mean, he might well be at the races, even when he's not doing a wild card, if you like. But he'll still be there often enough, I think. And yeah, looking forward to see what he does next year.
Absolutely. Well, we wish Paul all the best, but we'll be sure seeing him in the paddock next year. That's the rider stuff. Now, I want to come on to Moto 2 and Moto 3, but first of all, the last bit to sort of see off this MotoGP Section 1. We got a new team that we've already mentioned. In a bizarre sort of end of year scramble, it seemed, Keith, where just RNF and Crypto Data just seemed to collapse within hours after lots of speculation, them denying it, then suddenly it all came to fruition, and then super quick, suddenly, we've got America represented on the MotoGP grid, and it's from your old stomping ground, NASCAR.
Can you believe it? Can you believe that I had something to do in NASCAR? That's probably as hard to believe as anything else. Well, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, there's two trains of thoughts here. I've always liked the kind of constitution of NASCAR, the way that they treat their fans, the way that it's accessible, the sort of rigmarole, the PR that goes with it. It sort of suits motorcycle racing in their thinking, you know, for the fans. It is for the fans. The other side of that is that somebody tweeted me and say, do we want a load of drunken fans at trackside that only want to see crashes? Probably not a bad point when it comes to NASCAR. There's no doubt about that. But I don't think that will be the case in MotoGP. But I think American investment is important. And I think Dorna... really, the speed of this moved at such a pace because I think Dorna saw the opportunity in that market that's still not very stable. I mean, MotoGP is still not a really stable market, I don't believe, in America. And this might be that little fillip they need to make it a better thing, make it a bigger thing. It, you know, PR-wise, it's already probably got more publicity in the States than we would have if COTA was just running as per normal. And, you know, will there ever be a two Grand Prix in America? There should be. You know, a place the size of America, we should have two Grand Prix going on there. Where that will possibly be, you know, there's another track that's coming up, I think, in the next year over there as well, which might be looked in. They've got some great racetracks. It's like British Championship racetracks. We've got great racetracks, but none of them are homologated for Grand Prix apart from Donington Park and Silverstone, which is a terrible shame considering the kind of quality tracks we've got. Who'd like to see a Grand Prix at Brands Hatch? Me, to start with. Cadwell Park. That would be something a bit... No, I'm being ridiculous. Forget about
it. Have a word with Mr. Palmer.
I do. good old JP. He wouldn't put it on anyway. It would cost him too much money. He's only interested in the profit side of it rather than the Grand Prix side of it. But that's another story altogether. I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a very, very, very interesting year moving forwards. I think that the RNF thing fell apart. It's a strange thing, isn't it? The way Raslan Razali was the CEO at Sepang International Circuit. Then he was CEO of the new race team, the independent satellite team for Yamaha. What a great start they had in Moto2, Moto3, MotoGP, Petronas sponsorship. I never really got to the bottom of why that died as quick as it did. It was at 1 minute they were in, fully committed Petronas. It's not like they're short of a few quid. And that fell apart at the end of a year, very, very quickly. And this cryptocurrency mob from Romania, sort of press.
Crypto data, I think, is different to cryptocurrency, but that's by the by.
Well, yeah, I mean, whatever it is. At the end of the day, I've only ever lost money on it. So maybe I needed more data. I needed crypto data to look after me. But the point being is these guys came in and rumor has it they haven't quite, stumped up what they were contracted to stump up financially, which is could be a disaster for Razlan Razali. I mentioned Sito Pons being out of a job. That's a very sad situation. But Razlan Razali appears to be out of any kind of contention for any kind of a team. And it happened very quickly. It must have been deep-rooted over a long period of time for Dorna to shut the door, to slam it in their face as quick as they did. It has to be from the very, very top if you're going to kick someone like Crypto Data out in this particular instance. And the Romanians aren't very happy that they've lost face massively. And that's not a good thing when you're in something like cryptocurrency, I'm led to believe.
Yeah, I mean, Pete, what have you heard about it from your end? And obviously, we should say Trackhouse, the name of the team, the NASCAR team. They've got some big, heavy movers in there, including for those of you who are into your sort of rap pop music, Pitbull is an owner in the team.
Remember the Martin Brundle Pitbull interview on the grid?
I do not. Has he interviewed him?
I thought he did. Has he not done that at some
stage? Has he
stage?
Not done Pitbull? He's done a few like Pitbull, I'm sure. But we'll have to dig that out of the archive if he's done it. I want to interview Pitbull next year. That's the dream. And they're keeping the same riders, aren't they, Pete?
So they've got no choice.
Yeah. And they're already, it sounds like they're already trying to sign up Aprilia to supply the bikes long term.
I think that the deal is done with Aprilia as well. I think they've the grid places that was really the moment, wasn't it? There was this cryptic clue from Razlan, wasn't it? This post on his Facebook page saying last dance before the Valencia weekend. We sort of had a few people sort of scratching their heads, and then suddenly, as you say, just in the space of a few days, there were sort of statements going one way and then the other, and then there was this announcement saying the grid places would not be given to RNF Crypto Data for next year, which really, when you're a race team and you don't have grid places, you don't have anything. So at that point, it was quite clear that there was something else waiting in the wings, and that was this Trackhouse American team. And it sounds like they were already in negotiations, but I think it was obviously accelerated when this opportunity arose. I think that's sort of, it was almost, I won't say spur of the moment, but the opportunity came up when there was the problems with the RNF team, and they jumped on it and said, now's your time. If you want to be in MotoGP, now's your time. It's an interesting take. Keith has talked about trying to break America and how important that is. We've seen them try to get the riders, haven't we? We've seen Karen Bobia, Moto2, Joe Roberts. They haven't quite shown what they need to get another rider into MotoGP. Like, obviously we think of Nicky Hayden, Colin Edwards, Ben Spies, those guys. It's a while back now, but that's really what the sport needs. Now, this is another way of doing it, isn't it? You get an American team in. So that'll be interesting to see if the American fans, gravitate towards MotoGP because they now have a team.
Hey, it could be the next year could be the year MotoGP begins to crack America. Before you know it, it goes all Formula One, and we've got three races a year in the United States.
It's interesting that we saw the same thing with Vision Track, didn't we? I mean, in Moto3, I know, not in MotoGP, because the commitment is even bigger in MotoGP. But when Michael Laverty was given the opportunity to put together a team to take the two grid slots in Moto3, it was a similar thing. Done behind the scenes very, very, very quickly. Michael was given a timescale that you've got to put a team together and put the money together or not, because there is no shortage of people that want grid slots, and they are the currency in our business. Obviously, Aprilia, they were going to be in it anyway. They were already contracted. So, it was just a case of putting this new bunch together.
Yeah, basically.
It's amazing how quickly something happens when Dorna wants it to.
I mean, basically, you could say it's almost a rebranding. It's a management change, isn't it? The people at the top are changing, but I'm not quite sure if Wilco Zeelandberg is still going to be team manager, but everybody's certainly beneath that. I think Wilco's still going to confirm, you know, exactly what the pit management lineup is going to be, but everything beneath that, you'd imagine, is just going to be the same, be transferred across the bikes. The deal is done with Aprilia for the bikes. Sounds like they might even have 2024 bikes, so that would be a big boost for Oliveira. Well, not only Oliveira and Fernandez, but also for Aprilia as a whole to have four bikes, identical bikes, easier to compare the data as well.
I hope they don't go the wrong way by thinking that they can reinvent the wheel as a management team. That would worry me hugely, and we've seen it before in these teams where they think they are able to achieve something that isn't perhaps achievable. I think if I was putting money in a team like that, I would be looking to bring in bigger, better crew chief data management names. And there are one or two of them out there at the moment that I think are still free. And that would be the most prudent way of making sure your team operated in the right manner. I mean, even Aprilia did it with Rivola. You know, we didn't really know anything about Rivola, but somebody had this brainwave that let's bring him in and from Formula One and see if his management skills can bring our team on. And it did for Aprilia. And I think that if you bring in a bunch of Americans that what's the word? I'll use the word arrogant, but I don't mean it in a derogatory way. I think believing in what your style of management and your style of getting things done is a kind of arrogance. It's a bit like a sportsman. A sportsman believes he can be a winner. Is that a bad thing, being that way arrogant? Arrogance can be a good thing in your belief, your self-belief. But in this instance, I think that they would be well advised to bring in more names that can put the team together slightly better than it's been before. I think Rosali was running it down a little bit. It needs a little bit more input as far as that's concerned. And perhaps the Americans can just step back just a bit and oversee their investment into this new team.
Davide Brivio.
Yes.
No longer, his Formula One jaunt seemed a waste of time.
But not money.
From the outside.
He'll have made
he didn't do a lot, got paid a lot. But, you know, from the Formula One perspective, you know, he signed with the Alpine team, and they had clearly a man with a brilliant knowledge and talent that was not utilised. They've now officially parted ways. Could he be a name that comes back into the fold?
He's one of the names that was in my mind. I don't think you can afford to have the amount of time out that he's had at such a crucial time in MotoGP. So much has changed in MotoGP since he's not been here. It's not that he wouldn't be up to speed on it, because at the end of the day, you're either a bike man or a car man. Sorry, Harry. It's a situation where you can't...
Yeah, you're the one making more car analogies.
It's kind of... I am, you're right. I do, because I think the switch over between the two, we can learn from Formula One. And we can also ignore the things that they've got wrong. I think you'd be a fool if you didn't pay attention to what goes on in Formula One. It is the biggest motorsport in the world that we all have to accept. So therefore, there are things within Formula One that MotoGP could do with replicating. And there's a bloody lot of things in Formula One that we could definitely not do with replicating. But the point being is that I think that Brivio will have been paying attention to what's going on in the bikes. Particularly as he's not really been doing much in the cars, it would seem. So he's a bike guy at the end of the day, and he came from a very successful background in bikes. I'm sure he would be quite happy to come back in, or maybe not. It's a long, hard season. He's been in Formula One. If he's been at every racetrack in Formula One, it's a long, hard season in Formula One as well. So maybe he's of an age where he's made enough money and he doesn't want to commit. You know, it's a funny thing, isn't it? Commitment is something that you just... It goes without saying for most people. It's not something that you have to... Well, I'm fully committed. Anybody that says that, I'd worry about. It's something that's... you're a doer. You're in it. You're committed to it. It's your life. You breathe it. Mate, I have a problem in my own house here. They don't believe that I can watch so much bloody motorbikes. Nobody believes it. It's kind of like... But it's in your heart and in your head full time. There's no escaping it. And I think that kind of commitment you know, is what you have to have. It's an unconscious commitment and dedication to the sport beyond anything else in your life. And I think that once that drifts away from that, it starts to get diluted and you're not performing at your best.
Well, let's see what the next few months holds for Trackhouse and how they come together for 2024. Let's just step away from MotoGP for the moment because we can't ignore Moto2 and Moto3. And Pete, let's start with Moto2. Now, of course, already spoken about Pedro Acosta, champion, ahead of Tony Arbolino, Fermín Ardiguer, and Jake Dixon just behind. How do you look back on the Moto2 year? Of course, Acosta, the wonder child from the go. We'll see what he's got next year, finally, in MotoGP.
We will indeed, yeah. A bit like Bagnaia, he was the preseason favourite, wasn't he? He was the guy that we expected to sort of win the championship. What did he get? 7 wins in the end, which I think is the most since Bagnaia, when he won the title a few years back. So a dominant year, but not a record-breaking year. Moto2 as a whole, the racing wasn't fantastic, was it, at times? And I think that's also, you know, when we all jump on the wings are bad, the ride height devices are bad, the tyre pressure problems in MotoGP, you know, you've got Moto2 without any of those things and the racing wasn't great. So it is a complicated thing. Getting close racing is what it's not just as simple as taking some wings off and everyone will be closer again in MotoGP, because Moto2 showed that this year, I think. But yeah, Acosta, I mean, he's only done 3 years in Grand Prix, isn't he? He's been champion in two of them. Similar-ish to Joan Mir. He did 3 years before moving to MotoGP. He did two in Moto3 and then one in Moto2. So sort of the opposite way around. But yeah, I mean, everyone believes that Acosta is going to be obviously a star. Exactly how big a star is still to be seen. And of course, Fermín Ardiguer took some of that limelight at the end, didn't he? At the end of the season. So that's you know, that sort of took the shine off a little bit, I think. Of course, and then next year Pirelli tires, could be some big changes there, so we'll have to see what happens there. But certainly this year was Acosta's year, which I think we all expected. And yeah, I mean, good to see Ardiguer, the speed ups, good to see that the Calyx is not completely dominating, even though they are obviously, you know, they've won the championship over 10 years in a row now, I think. So there will be some more. I think Oscar Scurra is on the grid next year. A couple more of those bikes. So a bit more variety, let's hope. But yeah, I think it was the season that we cut, or the champion that we expected.
No doubt about it. Acosta cut above. Ardiguer interfered with him towards the end, but I wonder how much of that was because Acosta's eye had already been taken by MotoGP. Acosta's first ride out on that thing at Valencia was nothing short of absolutely spectacular. Riding style-wise rather than time-wise, I think, is where I want to go with that one. Losing Sam Lowes to Moto2, this is his last season in Moto2, goes across to World Superbikes for the competition between him and his twin brother at World Superbikes. Can't wait for that. We'll be talking with those guys. You two don't know about it yet. Sorry. I've got Sam and Alex Lowe's booked for February, so we will have
both. Have you now?
Both of the Lowe's brothers will be joining us. Sorry.
let me write that down. Jesus.
Well, there you go. Down the pub. It's another down the pub with Sam and Alex Lowe's later on. But they are great kids. It'll be very interesting to see what they've got to say. But that's in February next year. But losing Sam to MotoGP, he will be an asset to World Superbikes. There's nobody that works harder than Sam and Alex Lowe's to perform. I talk about dedication and commitment. Those two are absolutely bang on it. Jake Dixon, I feel a bit disappointed for Jake finishing in fourth place. He got third place all sewn up and then basically just slipped away. I know nothing counts except for a championship win, but believe me, third place is better than fourth place. Like in the obvious. So Jake won't be quite so happy with that, I suppose. Disappointments. Ayagura perhaps was a little bit disappointing. Somkiat Chantra a little bit disappointing in 2023. I might have expected something a little bit more from them. Joe Roberts, likewise. The American racing team, I'm a bit cheesed off with anyway, because what they've done to Rory Skinner, I'm going to keep banging that drum forever because I think they should be ashamed of themselves. And that's my thoughts on Moto2.
Yeah, fair. Fair, poor old Rory Skinner. Moto3, on the other hand, Pete, you mentioned Moto2 racing wasn't great, but Moto3 always delivers, sometimes a bit too chaotic. Jaume Masia, champion, ahead of Ayumu Suzuki and David Alonso. And particularly towards the end of the Moto3 season, some questionable riding. Moto3 is Moto3. It's crazy.
You're right. Yeah, I mean, there was, what, I think 10 races in a row where the winner was less than a second or something like that. It was, as you say, the opposite of Moto2 in many ways. It was unpredictable, close racing. Masia only 4 wins to take the title. But then he was the only Honda rider in the top 10 at the end of the year. I think if you're KTM, you're going to be sort of scratching your head and say, how did we lose that one? But you know, that was the nature of how close the racing was. I think a rookie star emerging, as you say, in David Alonso. I think he's definitely one to watch for the future, getting several wins in his rookie year like that. Very impressive. As you say, controversial end. A shame about what went on in Qatar with the teammates getting involved, teammate getting involved and things like that. But Sasaki at least goes up to Moto2 like Masia on a high, having got that win eventually at Valencia. Amazing to think he was fighting for the title all the way to the final round without a win.
Well, one thing's for certain, I got used to the Colombian national anthem thanks to David Alonso, which was quite nice, actually. A new national anthem to our repertoire that we hadn't heard before, so that's pretty good. Ayumi Sasaki should have won the championship. Couple of mistakes cost him dearly. That situation in Qatar was just, yeah, that's what cost him in the end. Only 6 points difference between Jaume Masia and Ayumi Sasaki. So I believe Sasaki should have been the world champion. Shoulda, woulda, coulda, and he weren't. So there you go. Underachievers. No, let's not go with underachievers in Moto3 because they're too young for worrying about that. Colin Veyer, I think the Dutchman, was brilliant. Really one to be watching next year as well. David Munoz, perhaps not quite where he should have been. Anybody else? Joel Kelso was a little unlucky as well during the course of the year, perhaps. Romano Fenati seems to, his star has finally fallen, I think, which is a shame because I always, even though he was controversial, I always liked having Romano Fenati somewhere on the grid and literally fighting. What else can we say? Denis Onchu, probably again.
Got a few wins.
His fourth place underachieving probably it is for him at this stage in his career.
Well, some prospects to watch out for there next year in Moto3 and Moto2 as well. Let's come back to MotoGP then. And who impressed, who disappointed, Keith?
What a year to ask me that question. I was disappointed with quite a lot of the top runners, to be honest with you. I mean, if we're going to bloody look at there were quite a lot of people that disappointed me one way and another, you know, giving away points in the way they did. I wouldn't have expected that at this level. You know, Martin did it, Bagnaia did it, Bezzecchi was on his way up, so we can't argue with him. Brad Binder, you know, Miller has been a disappointment. I really hesitate to say that because I love Jack Miller, but he really finished in 11th place. I mean, he should have won the final round. You know, if he hadn't been Jack Miller, he might find himself in a difficult contractual position with his season so far. Digi managed to pull it out of the bag at the end of the year. I mean, he has to be the greatest improver and saved his MotoGP career. There's not many people that do that in the hole that he was in. And to dig his way out on a Gresini bike, which is a little bit older, and perhaps not quite the motorcycle you need to win consistently. I mean, I have to say, it was a brilliant ride. Bagnaia regained his composure in magnificent way towards the end of the season. After he got run over in Catalonia, I mean, that could have been game over for his championship when he could have easily ended up with a broken leg. I mean, we all thought he did. Cameras stayed on him while he was laying in the middle of the track and clearly in pain. And to be run over by a motorcycle, any motorcycle, even a Moto3 bike, you wouldn't want it. So to be able to fight back from that position, very mature. Bagnaia is a strange one for next year. Has he reached his peak? Is that Pete good enough coming what's coming for next year? That's my question. Or has he got a little bit more room for improvement? That's going to be the question mark for 2024 for the back-to-back championships. That ain't been done for a long time. You know, if you look at the old record books, you know, Bagnaia back-to-back, they always say that retaining a world championship is harder than winning one.
Pete, who impressed? Who disappointed?
Just on the Bagnaia thing, I think if he can just even cancel out some of those mistakes, I mean, he would have had another, 20 or 30 points. So I think that there is that bit of room for improvement. Speed-wise, I'm not sure, as you say, you know, can he get any quicker? We'll see. Disappointment was, I think, Marquez. I honestly thought Marquez coming into the year, you know, he's fully fit for the first time since 2020, you know, pre-season 2020. He was on pole in Portimao. I mean, that's, you know, round one, Marquez was on pole position. And, you know, good sprint race. And then, of course, disaster in the main race. And it all went downhill from there. So I think that was...
You know who all that really affected as well for the whole year, I think? Yeah, Miguel Oliveira.
Well, it affected him, but it affected Jorge Martin as well.
Well, and yes, of course.
Yeah, so I mean, that's the standout, I suppose, one for me. The surprises or the feel-good, I would go Zarco's win in Australia, Didier winning in Qatar, even Aleix actually winning his home race after the catastrophic blunder of the year before, you know, to come back from that and win at the track that, he could used to be at school and could hear the bikes at the racetrack because he lives so close. Rins at Kota, not so much for Rins, but just for LCR. I mean, they hadn't been anywhere near competitive like that since Cal left. So just for them to get a result like that, I think those ones would be up there for me.
And one final thought before we finish off with our quick quiz. You mentioned Bagnaia there. Obviously, it was Jorge Martin who emerged as the main contender at the end of the year, not on a factory bike. He even brought some unbranded leathers to the final round just in case he got the call up, if he won the championship, to switch to the factory Ducati. You talk about how much room is there to grow for Bagnaia, but Keith, how much more can Martin do next year, not on a factory bike, but clearly with the speed in hand to challenge?
I think kind of right at the very beginning of this, we talked about Jorge Martin. He for me, has that little bit extra room for improvement here and there. I mean, he's clearly fast in sprints. It depends on how he works with his team next year to sort out his positioning in the main race on a Sunday. We are talking about tiny, tiny, tiny amounts of difference now between all of these bikes and all of these riders. It is such a small amount. You know, grabbing a yard here and there is old-fashioned. There's not a millimetre to grab here and there on the brakes. You know, it stuns me just how close it all is. So he who gets his head around it, and I think Jorge Martin is a very... It's funny, isn't it? In interviews, you would say Jorge Martin was the most confident man out of he and Bagnaia in interviews, pre-race. But then you get on the grid and Martin looked more nervous than Bagnaia. Bagnaia always looked a little bit more composed. So I would say that probably Jorge Martin needs to work on his composure a little bit more. Those immediate minutes pre-race, you know, the excitement of that, the rush of blood. You know, we always expect him to be quick in the sprint because that's what it is. It's a balls out bloody half race distance. Don't worry about conserving tires or strategy. It's just get on and go for it. The kind of races we all love. Yeah, it's like club racing, national racing, you know, short races, loads of them. Let's go for it. But of course, it's a bit more about getting the 25 pointer on the Sunday that counts. You know, it's being able to make that work. And I think that's where Bagnaia had the advantage this year. I think maybe for Jorge Martin, where his improvement comes is from maturity. And that comes naturally.
Well, I think he's going to be on the same spec bike in theory, isn't he, as the factory team again. So that's a good thing for him. The key thing, though, is going to be, is he going to have that comfortable setup that he seemed to find, as we say, around Catalunya's time, that they just didn't touch? You know, that he was like, right, that's how I like the bike. Don't touch it. And then he just performed every weekend. Will that transfer across to the 24 bike? There's obviously going to be changes with the 24 bike. Gigi's kind of indicated that he thinks there'll be a bigger difference between the 24 and the 23 Ducatis than there was between the 22 and the 23 Ducatis. So that, spells a bit of bad news maybe for guys like Marquez Bezzecchi, the guys that will be on the year-old bike. We've got to wait and see, haven't we? But I think it's going to be interesting to see how he responds to this, coming so close and losing out at the final round. We saw the tears in the pit box afterwards, didn't we? But I think, you know, he's going to have all that confidence of knowing that he can do it, that he is fast enough to be a world champion.
And it's about who else is going to interfere with him, who else is going to frustrate that. And I think we're going to have a lot more spoilers as the year comes on as well. All of those races, before as we started the season, no one, sprint set up, race Sunday set up, completely different. Nobody quite knew how that was going to work, how it was going to pan out tire-wise, performance-wise, qualifying-wise. They've got all that data now. We start with next year, everybody's going to be, hopefully, not crashing into each other like Marquez did last year in Portugal at round one.
I'm excited for 2024, and it's just around the corner now. So enjoy a little break, but we'll be right back with more MotoGP action. But first of all, before we round out our Christmas special, a quiz that I have designed. It's Keith versus Pete. It's five questions, and we'll start with question number one to Keith first. In the event of a tie, there is a tiebreaker. Keith Ewan. 32 riders took part in a MotoGP weekend in 2023. Which rider finished last in the championship?
You just broke up right at the point for the cross of that.
I'll repeat that again. Which rider finished last in the 2023 championship? Don't look. No looking. No looking.
I feel sorry for Pete because I've got it all in front of me.
No, but don't look at it.
That's all. I'm honest when I'm cheating.
Oh, well, go on then. Who is it?
Well, it's Alvaro Bautista.
Well, can I accept that?
Why? Because he's not a permanent rider.
Well, no. I had a different answer. I had actually technically not classified, but still on the standings, Takumi Takahashi, because he didn't qualify, but a DNQ places him lower than Alvaro Bautista's 17th place. So technically they're kind of joint 31st, but a DNQ is worse than a 17th. So I'm afraid actually you don't get the point for that. So it's incorrect. I was looking for
this
Takumi
is more complicated
Takahashi.
Than tire pressures.
Exactly.
Do you reckon you would have got that, Pete?
No.
See, this wasn't going to be easy. Pete, your question next. Raul Fernandez is the youngest MotoGP rider on the 2023 grid. But what year was he born?
Oh. So what would he be? Early 20s?
I'm afraid we can give no help.
2003? Two.
Oh, incorrect. Both attempts. The year 2000, Raul Fernandez was born. The year 2000. Right, God, it's been a woeful start. Okay, Keith, back to you. Your favourite man, Danny Pedrosa. How heavy is he? And you know what? You can be within 2 kilograms here. I'm looking for kilograms. I don't have the other measurement.
47 kilos.
53.
Oh.
I had to guess.
I was looking for 51. Ah. So Pete technically is closer. So I'll bear that in mind.
It wasn't
if
my
you
question.
Continue.
No, I just...
It wasn't your question, but I'll bear it in mind if this continues to be a disaster quiz. Pete, back to you. Can you name me the rider furthest down the championship order who won a Grand Prix in 2023?
Oh, Rins.
Correct. It's Rins. Well done. We're off the board. Right. Okay. Keith, you need this. You love the circuit Ricardo Tormo in Valencia as the MotoGP season finale. It's well known. So can you tell me how long the track is in either kilometers or miles? And you can be within, you know, a few.
2.2 miles.
I'll give you it. 2.4. Oh. I'll give you it though, because I'm feeling, because it's Christmas. Right. So it goes down to the tiebreaker. Now, I need you to raise your hand first. That's how I know whoever gets this. So it's to both of you. And whoever raises their hand first answers the question. Trackhouse Racing enters MotoGP next season. An American team. But can you tell me where in America they are based? Keith Ewan, hand raised.
It's got to be the Carolinas, isn't it?
Can you be a little bit more specific?
North Carolina.
Incorrect. No.
Oh, bastard.
Pete, you have the option here.
Florida?
Oh, both incorrect. I was looking for Nashville, Tennessee. So in which case, I'm going to give the quiz to Pete McLaren because he was closer for Danny Pedrosa's weight. So Pete McLaren, you win the 2023 MotoGP Christmas quiz. Congratulations.
With one point.
One and a half.
Danny Pedrosa must have more muscles than I thought he had because I based him on my wife's weight. Not that I've ever picked Danny Pedrosa up.
I was going to say, did you?
Not yet. There's still time. Well, look, that brings to an end our show. Pete McLaren, thank you so much from Crash.net. Keith Ewan, as always, it's a pleasure to chat MotoGP with you. And thank you as well for watching and listening wherever you've been able to find us. People are still re-finding us all the time after the old show ended. So please continue to spread the word, to comment, like, share, subscribe. It goes longer than you know. We are going to be back for a show in January and February. We've also got our James Toseland Down the Pub special, which part one is going to be out on Christmas Day. So you can enjoy that with your turkey as well. It's well worth a watch. And as Keith has already alluded to, we've got lots more in the pipeline too. The Lowe's brothers, apparently. That's new to me. So looking forward to that. Keith, any final words before we wrap up for Christmas?
Thanks very much for being with us. I mean, I think that obviously, you know, Pete and Crash stay together, but me and Harry drifted off to OMG and set our own situation up. We appreciate you being with us throughout the year. We appreciate Pete's input as well when he's able to join us. We've got plenty planned for next year. It was all a bit of a kick bollock scramble, wasn't it, in August when we decided to set up OMG MotoGP. But we've got a lot of plans for the coming year. But as Ari's already said, if you can subscribe, tick all the boxes that you need to tick, it really does help on the algorithm and gets us back in there as well. And the more the more viewers that we have, the more content that we can give you for free, as it happens. We're not charging for any of this, which really makes a game for me.
We might have some merchandise in the new year as well.
Yes,
there might be a little new look coming for OMG. We've done a bit of a rebrand for next year, so have a look at that. But yeah, I reiterate everything Keith said. Pete, thank you so much for all your time. Thank you actually to all of our guests as well who've joined us and given up their time as well, and Amy Reynolds as well, who's come on to guest host a couple of shows. Massively appreciated. Them and more, we'll see you in the new year. Have a great Christmas or however you spend it, and we will see you in 2024. But keep a lookout for our James Toseland episodes as well on YouTube and all the audio platforms. But until then, have a good one. Bye-bye.
Happy Christmas.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.